Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metal Magdalene with Jet right here on MetalMessiahRadio.com. Tonight we have with us a special guest. We have with us Autarch of the band Lightning Swords of Death. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about Lightning Swords of Death. How did the band start out, and why did you start it in the first place?
The band started like a decade ago, and basically, it was the coming together of some like-minded individuals that wanted to start something and hadn't found the right people, and we had kind of eccentric interests, and so they came together. We kind of had the same philosophy that we wanted our band to, we wanted to think of it as something more than just a bunch of guys jamming. We wanted to come up with a motive that was a little bit more than just music, and sort of a just being able to like create a symbol, really. You know, like the idea was that it would be a multimedia hyperdimensional sigil, which is like a piece of art has a magical purpose assigned to it, a desire that's been abstracted. Only in this case, instead of just a drawing, it's a band, it's visuals, it's a performance, it's a psychodrama that we unleash upon stages.
And who's in the band right now? How many people are in it, and who are they? Just so our listeners know.
It became a quintet for this record. We were a four-piece for a long time, and we added inverted Chris as our lead guitarist. The band was started by myself and Roskva, who's our chief songwriter, and Menno Verbaten, who is our bass player. And our drum section has been a continuously revolving seat. We recorded with Mike Vega, who did an outstanding job on Bathymetic Chaosium. And for the for the tour, we're going to be working with Jackson Ferris, who we're borrowing from an amazing band called Stonehaven from Kansas City.
And are you going to keep the fifth member now? Are you, do you like it with five guys?
Oh, yeah. We're a five-piece now. I mean, we were doubling up on the guitars on the last album, so yeah, we kind of were already preparing for it. We were just looking for the right personality and the right skill.
And hopefully you have them now.
Yeah, he's been initiated. He received his brand and cloak.
When people describe your music, right, it's with words like disturbing, dark, you know, black and death, but with great riffs, and sometimes it's almost, you know, horrific yet spectacular. How would you describe your sound, and what is the subject matter that you like to write about mostly?
Well, the band has always been influenced by the concepts of occult concepts and magical concepts, folklore, mysticism, esoterica. We're motivated mostly by a postmodern magical system called chaos magic, which is kind of a cut to the basics, undogmatic system of magic that allows for constant paradigm shifts. You can believe one thing intensely to achieve a certain result and then shift completely into another philosophy for another piece of work. It's the perfect magical system for this time period, in my opinion.
Would you say?
And the current record is basically about the experience of invoking Baphomet, which is the hermaphroditic deity that was made most popular probably by the Alypheus Livy illustration of the goat-headed hermaphrodite with the serpents wrapped around his thighs.
Now, we're going to get to the new album a little later on, but still, you know, starting out in Southern California, you know, we talked a little bit before we started recording. What's the scene like there for this type of music? I mean, you were kind of underground band, and now you're starting to come out to light. I mean, you know, you've been around, like you said, for 10 years, but I think a lot more people are starting to hear about you now. How did you even, you know, get to where you are, and what is the scene like in Southern California for music like you guys have?
It's thriving.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bands. It wasn't always like this. It kind of slowed down for metal in general for a time, kind of after the whole glam rock hair bands died out. It quieted down, and then a lot of labels moved to LA, and a lot of bands moved to LA, and then all of a sudden everyone's playing metal here, and there's places to play and clubs to go to and whatnot. But when we started out, there wasn't too much like Lightning Swords of Death, and we really weren't even connected to the other black metal bands in the area. We didn't know them, so we ended up playing a lot with kind of strange avant-garde bands, and not doing the Sunset Strip like so many other bands were doing. This is early in our career.
We were
playing like art galleries and warehouses.
Oh, that's
downtown.
Cool, though, yeah.
Kind of doing it the ass backwards way of doing it, but I'm glad we did it that way. It was unique.
It is, and it's the fun way, too, you know? It's like you said, it's your band is like art, and then playing in these places, it almost sounds perfect, you know? Now, you know, the Golden Plague, right, your first release, you recorded it in, what, one of your members' apartments? Tell us all about how that went over, I mean, that process for you.
It was the economy of means leads to the subtlety of expression, if you'll allow me a John Singer Sargent quote. We had no other option. There was no money, and we were just making music, you know.
Sure.
Trying to use what we had. So, like a lot of bands, we were like, all right, well, let's make this the most awful sounding four track recording we could, you know. I mean, but it came out cool, and it has definitely like the
raw.
An atmospheric is created from the raw way that we went about making our music, you know.
Which is,
and it's you end up with like something that sounds like it was recorded underground in a bunker.
But that's kind of cool though, because a lot of the black metal bands from all over the world, their first CDs and albums always sound that way. So you know what I'm saying? And plus,
like, well, I mean, it's a kind of music that, you know, you're kind of on your own making it. It's alienating to most people because fun is not really the priority. And it's something that is often made by some lonely people and end up in their closet making a record by themselves because they can't find many other people that share their philosophy.
Right.
And so it leads to some incredibly experimental and interesting music, you know?
It is interesting. And then you followed that up with a split release, right, with Valdor. Oh, why did you want to do a split? And do you like doing splits? Do you think you would do that again?
I wouldn't rule anything out. that was another, just, you know, we had made friends with these guys, Valdor, and they were like our brothers, and we toured with them, and it became quite clear that if we all pitched in, we could self-release a brutal split, and that's what we did. And it was a great way to get our music out there, and it led to us signing with Metal Blade, for sure.
I love splits, too. I like getting the best of two different bands, and especially if your favorite band's on there, you get to get introduced to kind of another one, you know. I think splits are a great idea, and I actually, more and more people are doing them again now, so that's why I was wondering if that might be in the back of your head a little bit there.
I wouldn't rule it out, you know. I mean, I'm not sure how Metal Blade feels about splits, but
that's true. I don't see too many coming off of them.
I think it's a cool way of getting people exposed to two to a new band.
Sure. Sure. And now you have a bunch, you know, I was reading through your bio, and you have a bunch of tracks on the Undead Knights game. How did that opportunity come about? And have people ever had you, like, sign their games or anything like that?
You know, I have signed games, and there's a lot of people that never have been exposed to the type of music that we make or our message.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the video game, they found us, you know, and it's rather unique. Like if you YouTube Golden Plague tracks, there's always like this dialogue amongst like young gamers that discovered our band because of Undead Knights, and there's a lot of Golden Plague songs on there, and I think it's really exciting because
it is cool.
People that have never heard of your music before and never weren't even involved in like underground black metal or music that's inspired by like witchcraft, they found themselves gravitated by it and pursuing the rest of the records, and now we have like a whole like fan set that, you know, is in Japan. I've never even heard of a black metal band from Los Angeles, so it worked out really well. We had no money at the time, which is most of the time, and we really wanted to go on tour, and it afforded us to be able to get into a van and travel with our comrades at Alder and have some incredible shows. So, and the way it came about was literally there was a knock at my door, and there was a Japanese girl there.
Oh my God.
Your cake company. And it was a friend of my neighbor's, and they were talking, and he's like, you know, my neighbor's in Lightning Swords of Death. And we started a dialogue with the company that makes the game.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, we were showing up at doing a meet and greet at E3 video game convention and shaking hands and bullet belts. It was
That's
really,
kinda
really
cool.
Bizarre. But if you play the game, you know, it's interesting. There, you are playing from the perspective of a demon
who
enslaves the dead and turns them into an army. So it's not necessarily like Mario that your game is based on. It's an incredibly brutal game about a dark entity that enslaves everyone he kills.
Awesome.
I couldn't have asked for a more
perfect,
legitimate evil game.
No, you guys also, right? You were featured on a soundtrack to a horror movie, Stepfather. Now, how did that come about? Somebody else come knocking on your door for that one too?
Yeah. That was Roscoe's neighbor, I think.
Jesus.
I mean, I don't know. You know,
it's kind of funny.
Like I said, this band has always been a tool to exploit laws. Our unique perception of the laws of attraction and causality, and so we directed our will towards bringing about several random possibilities that would allow us to do things that we normally would not be allowed to do because of financial restrictions,
sure.
Or just the fact that like we're creating a completely unlicensable style of music.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, if you have a power metal band, then guess what? You probably could sell your songs and have a lot of incredible licensing opportunities, and that's what really pays for big tours and everything.
Sure.
Nobody's getting tour support anymore. No one's getting any money in underground black metal unless you're like a huge band, like Behemoth or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put out to the universe that we wanted to do certain things and to be afforded certain opportunities. And so things like girls from video games knocking on your door, or some remake of a movie asking for a song off your demo tape.
That's cool, though.
It's not so strange to me,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure it would seem really strange. you know, we're in Los Angeles and they're making movies all the time. And then there's always that scene that, you know, is going to have, like, the angry kid in his room before he goes out with a knife, you know, and they want some metal band. Let it be ours. Kick us a check so we can go out and tour and spread our message.
Now, in 2010, right, you guys, that's when you guys signed to Metal Blade Records. No, it's like you were saying, it's not, you know, black metal bands don't get a lot of opportunities. How did that all come about? I mean, did they come to you, or did you submit something? How did that even happen?
We were playing a Los Angeles metal fest, called the Murder Fest, I believe, is what it was.
Uh-huh.
And Papa Faley from Metal Blade was there.
Oh, cool.
And he saw us perform, and we got contacted shortly after. I was kind of you know, shocked and delighted about it. I mean, some bands kind of want to stay cult and do cassette only releases and only make like 10 of them, and that's cool. But that was never what we wanted to do. Like,
but did you dream of it even by accident?
I think we definitely knew that we wanted to reach a lot of people and to play as many places as we could, and we were open to seeing what opportunities would reveal themselves to us. So I don't think we specifically were casting sigils in the direction of Metal Blade.
No, but you probably had
we definitely knew that we were confident in our art,
right?
And that we wanted to load it into a giant media dirt bomb and drop it into pop culture. So that was the plan.
Now, and that's after you signed with Metal Blade. That's when you recorded the Extra Dimensional Wound, right?
That's right.
Now, was this the first big professional recording, if that's what you want to call it, album that you guys did? And did you still produce this one?
Yeah, it was produced by... We always produce our own music.
Uh-huh.
At least at this... I'm not saying that's the only way it'll ever happen, but currently that's what's going on.
Yep.
So it's produced by Rasta, who is my writing partner and co-founder of the band. And we recorded in Trench Studios, same place that we recorded the new one.
Right.
And then it was mastered and mixed from Necromorbus Studios. Yep. And that decision was pretty much informed by the fact that we really didn't want to go for like the frigid, icy sound.
Right.
Of like a lot of bands that like our brothers, say, in Valder, like, their music literally sounds like you're standing in the middle of a whiteout on a tundra. That's not really the way our music sounds.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted something that sounded like hell. I wanted the fire to be, like, kissing the faces of everyone that listened to the music. Even if it's fire made of, like, giant ribbons of latticed ectoplasm, I still wanted that feeling.
Right, right.
And I had heard that on a lot of recordings from Necromortis. So we reached out to Spurker, and he was into it, and he did a marvelous job.
And then, you know, it seems like things really started taking off really from there. Of course, you know, you started getting more promotion in places that you probably couldn't reach before yourselves. And you started playing with some really great bands. You had some great tours with bands, like you had mentioned, you know, Behemoth, my favorites, you know, like Septic Flesh, Creator, and the such. What were the feelings like in the Lightning Swords of Death Camp at this point when you were like, okay, you're signed to Metal Blades, you're performing with these bigger bands, you're kind of getting drawn out of your, you know, dark, comfortable, artsy type of atmosphere and kind of thrown out into the public eye a little more? What was it like for you guys going through this transition?
Well, it was kind of like the way a cruel parent teaches his kid to swim, you know? you've kind of drop kicked us into the deep side of the pool.
And right.
I'm really glad that that was the way it went about. Right after we were recording Extra Dimensional Wound, we literally like dropped the finished tapes into the mail and like jumped in the bus and went out to meet Behemoth.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
And we had been, you know, like I said, it was rare that we were playing on a stage yet. It was like we were playing on the floor, like old school rock shows. You know, it was like warehouse, no air conditioning, and you know, if anybody wanted to see the band, it was when I was standing on an egg carton.
right.
So there's, you know, all of a sudden we're playing to like 1,500 people.
Yeah.
Huge auditoriums. So we quickly were learning how to play for that many people. It was cool. It was amazing. I mean, that was the most fun we've had so far on a, forgive the racket, I'm feeding my dog.
Like he sounds like he's doing dishes or...
No, I was trying to find a clean bowl for the little guy. See, we got little cute dogs that we have to feed. Part of our magic. But yeah, like Behemoth was like crash course in playing to fucking real, excuse my French. Forget this is radio.
It's a real audience. Edited like radio, so no FCC regulations. You can say whatever you want. So anyways,
oh, I'm not even, so this is internet radio.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, awesome. I would have been dropping F-bombs.
Oh, now you can start. Go ahead.
Fuck.
We were up there with fucking Behemoth. It was fucking amazing.
But hey, those guys were so incredibly professional, and they were like we were a sloppy bunch of dirtbag devil worshippers trying to like... get to each gig on time and get our scrims up and you know, do our thing and make sure that we had enough fog juice and, you know, you got Behemoth that is just like a giant death robot programmed for one purpose. And
mm-hmm.
We immediately, you know, we kind of learned how to handle that kind of timing and having it together and dialed in, so... You know, the universe takes care of you, and that whole situation. It really, we got onto the label that we needed to be on miraculously, and mm-hmm. then were shoved onto a perfect tour for us to learn how to do what we had been doing in these like living rooms and in basement venues.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like here's a big stage.
And getting back to this album, that, you know, now, is Cloven Shields like an intro to Chains of Decay? Or, you know what I mean? Or is it supposed to be separate? Because when I listen to it, I take it as like an intro into like Chains of Decay. And to me, of course, because I make up my own concept of what's going on with your band as it's going along. It's like an intro, and like I said, it's like this movie running in my head, so it's like, you know, Cloven Shield is like this intro, and then Chains of Decay comes in, and it just makes for like this great production. I mean, is it supposed to be an intro, or is it just a separate...
I wouldn't call it an intro. You know when you said that you were listening to the record, and
mm-hmm.
kind of there was a movie happening?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That Cloven Shield's maintains that feeling of like a sort of psychic cinematic experience.
Mm-hmm.
We, like you said, you know, Bathymeticism, the opener, you're expecting things to start off maybe slow, and instead you're thrown into the storm of Acid Gate, and then you're sucked into the vacuum of psychic waters.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you've been sucked into the vacuum, it just was appropriate for you to kind of float in this pocket universe that we've created, which is Cloven Shields.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the phrase Cloven Shield, it's basically a shield that has been cut in half by an edged weapon. Okay, the mm-hmm. shield broke.
Mm-hmm.
And so that at that point in the record, your own defenses,
mm-hmm.
your emotional, psychic defenses, mm-hmm. If you've been listening to the record closely, have now been penetrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've been left open to receive chain to decay.
Right. Oh.
And so that is why it's there. It's because you've been sucked into the vacuum of psychic waters,
mm-hmm.
which is the psychedelic delirium that was induced by invoking Baphomet.
Right.
And now you're floating willy-nilly in a sort of pocket universe, in zero Gs, waiting for the next event, which is chain to decay.
Mm-hmm.
And so your any defenses you had have been rendered useless, and now it's time to be filled with the rest of the record.
It is an experience. Okay, now hopefully I can say this right. Epicyclarium? Is that how you say that name?
Exactly how you say it.
Well, there's another one. Gave me chills, you know, that traditional black elements, you know, black metal elements in it. But you kind of make it your own, and it's a great piece of art. I mean, that's how I consider that song. It's like a piece of art. And then it goes into, and then I don't have the track list in front of me. I just have notes of what I listen to, so I'm not exactly how sure it goes. But Oaken Chrysalis, is that what it is?
It's actually a Riley Worm.
Okay, but the song, well, I don't know where the Oaken Chrysalis is. Is that somewhere near the end of
Oaken Chrysalis is the last song.
Okay.
Actually, it goes Chain to Decay,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes into Riley Worm,
mm-hmm.
goes into Epicyclarium,
okay.
and it goes into Oaken Chrysalis.
Okay, so these are the ones that really affected me enough to make notes, right? And the very end, okay, like you said, Oaken Chrysalis, this was so much different than the others, to me at least. I mean, I'm sure to most listeners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just like, well, this was kind of weird almost. It was just like, you know, you guys strolling off into the fucking sunset or something. It was just kind of a
weird... That is exactly what that is, us riding off into the sunset. It's kind of lighthearted.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I wanted to say skipping.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I would describe the Oaken Chrysalis as the cackle of witches.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's another expression of the completion of the spell, which is the record. And
yep.
It's a sort in witchcraft, the cackle of witches is attributed to the idea that after you after you do the work of magic,
mm-hmm.
Often you do a banishing ritual, which I don't always do.
Mm-hmm.
But for the purposes of this record, we actually included it as a sort of song that was kind of lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, and it's hardly lighthearted at all. It's lighthearted in the sense of taking pliers and having your teeth ripped out of your jaw for fun, but it does have like it is a black and roll sort of fueled song, and so
yeah.
it does have a dancing skeleton kind of fun atmosphere about it, and that was intentional because this is the closer,
mm-hmm.
and even after the torturous fun fizzles out, you're still floating in the vortex.
That's exactly how it came across to me. Like, the happy satisfaction, you know, at the end of it. Was just...
Exactly.
It was great. Now, this album was released just last month. What have the early reactions been to it so far?
People seem to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to, like, spend all day looking for reviews on the record.
Right. Right.
Kind of like, I'm more interested in figuring out a tour at
right.
this point.
Right.
But it seems that it's being well received.
Yeah, it's a great album, and you spoke a little bit about touring. Will you be touring a lot now to follow this up?
Yeah. I mean, there has to be a demand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, if there is a demand for us to tour, then we will tour.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just released, yeah.
Something concrete to announce on your
right,
show.
Right, no, no.
But it's definitely a buzz.
Plans in the making.
Yeah. And plans are coming together.
And will these plans that are coming together hopefully bring you outside of the United States as well? That would be cool.
That's the next trick, isn't it? I have a plan to get us over there.
Okay, and you have to dream it first.
I'm not curse it by talking about it. But it's very expensive for a band like us to go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're contacted regularly by fans that are asking when
sure.
we're going to finally come abroad, but so far Canada is as far as we've gone. I mean, we just need to...
And look what that got you.
Right. Yeah. I had to go back to the workshop and pound nails through leather for hours.
Or you could just go on the Canada eBay and buy your stuff back. So
that's what I'm going to try and do next time I'm over there in the Great White North.
There you go. And you know, the funny thing is too, when I talk to European bands, they've got the same dilemma. They want to come over here, but they can't. You know, if they want to, that's the grand plan, but it's not as easy as just hopping on a plane and flying somewhere. You know,
it's not like it used to be.
No,
really, really difficult. You know, and there's so many, especially, you know, let's face it. I mean, most of us that are involved in this style of music probably don't always land on the right side of the law. So there's a lot of problems with travel.
Yep.
On both sides.
Yes.
You know, like we've been detained plenty of times at Canadian borders, but we actually use witchcraft to get through.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
You gotta do what you gotta do. We make these things called black pyramids that help us. I'm not going to get into that.
No,
anyway,
that's another show.
Getting to Europe is a dream, and we want to do it desperately. And it's just a matter of money and timing. And you know, I would love to see some kind of extremely rich person with a passion for our music just like write us a check. That's welcome. I hear about it happening where it's like,
hey. Who knows?
Yeah, I've got $100,000 in my pocket. I might as well just get this band I like out here.
Maybe.
Stranger things have happened.
Maybe the door will be, somebody will be knocking on your door when we hang up.
that would be great.
And if that's the case, call me back because I want to hear about that.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'm going to let you get going. I think we covered like everything and then some.
Indeed.
I think we'll probably have a couple extra shows maybe on, you know, Satanism in the left-hand path and shit like that. You know, we actually have a promoter here that is our reverend, so, boy, you know, I know a little bit about it, and, you know...
He's a reverend from what faith?
Leviathan, left-hand path. Does that sound right?
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that he was like a minister as well.
No, he's one of your people.
Oh, cool. I was like, set up a debate. That would be great.
That'd be even more exciting. Oh, no. There'd be black pyramids flying and freaking prayers going. And... No. But anyways, thank you so much again. What's the name of the album?
Baphometic Chaosium.
And it's available now. It's off of Metal Blade, and I'm sure if they go to the Metal Blade site, they can find it there. And I think you guys have a website too, right?
We have a web store, and we have a Facebook, and we have a website and a blog. And another thing that should be mentioned
mm-hmm.
is that we have our first music video
mm-hmm.
as well. And I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I would definitely recommend to check it out.
I'll post it up on my page. I do have it in there. Vince sent it to me. I was too busy. Are you kidding me? After I listened to your album last night, I was like upstairs, turned all the lights on, and was like under my covers because I didn't want to like look out and see that thing staring at me or something. So.
Well, let me tell you, a lot of the images that you mentioned
mm-hmm.
that you were seeing when you
mm-hmm.
your eyes when you listened to this record, they're we realize them in the flesh in the video.
Uh-huh.
So I would suggest checking it out. It's
I will definitely. Like, as soon as I get off the phone with you, I'm going to post it to my Facebook.
Great.
Tell everybody I just got off the phone with you. That's what you do in this social media. But again, thank you so much. And hang on 1 second. I want to get a quick ID from you.
Okay.